नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय इत्युत्थानपदक्पुत्रो ध्रुवकृष्णपरायणः अद्भुत्रयाणां लोकानां चूडामणिरिवामलः इत्युत्थानपदक्पुत्रो ध्रुवकृष्णपरायणः अद्भुत्रयाणां लोकानां चूडामणिरिवामलः इत्युत्थानपदक्पुत्रो ध्रुवकृष्णपरायणः अद्भुत्रयाणां लोकानां चूडामणिरिवामलः Mataji's chant, please. Ityutana padak putro Dhruva Krishna parayanaha Adbhutrayanam lokanam Ityutana padak putro Dhruva Krishna Parayanaha Adbhutrayanam Lokanam Chudamanir Ivamanaha Iti thus Uttanapadaha of Maharaj Uttanapada Putraha the son, Dhruvaha, Dhruva Maharaj, Krishna Parayanaha, fully Krishna conscious, Adbhut became Trayanam of the three, Lokanam worlds, Chuda Munahi. The summit jewel. Iva, like. Amalaha, purified. Translation. In this way, the fully Krishna conscious Dhruva Maharaj, the exalted son of Maharaj Uttanapada, attained the summit of the three statuses of planetary systems. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The exact Sanskrit terminology for Krishna consciousness is here mentioned. Krishna parayanaha. Parayana means, quote, going forward, unquote. Anyone who is going forward to the goal of Krishna is called Krishna parayana, or fully Krishna conscious. The example of Dhruva Maharaj indicates that Every Krishna conscious person can expect to reach the topmost summit of all three planetary systems within the universe. A Krishna conscious person can occupy an exalted position beyond the imagination of any ambitious materialist. End of purport. Iti utanapada putro dhruva krishna parayanaha adbhut trayanam lokanam chuda manir ivamalaha. In this way, the fully Krishna conscious Dhruva Maharaj, the exalted son of Maharaj Uttanapada, attained the summit of the three statuses of planetary systems. What's the cutoff time? 8:15? This is a summary section of a long narration about the life of Dhruva Maharaj. The destination of Dhruva Maharaj is the spiritual world. And, of course, the narration is really exciting. And the destination, the overall Leela is pointing to how does one go from Sakkama Bhakti to Nishkam Bhakti. We all know the first one very well. We're very familiar with mixed desire for devotional service and desire for other stuff. And how does one go from mixed to unmixed? And Dhruva does it, so he makes a path and shows what are the steps necessary to get to that stage. Now, the focus here is what that stage is. But Prabhupada expressed on a number of occasions that when you've defined the goal, it's very easy to make a plan to take the steps necessary to reach the goal. But if you don't have a well-defined spiritual goal, how are you going to get there? It's like getting in your car and going for a ride, and somebody asks you where you're going. It's going for a ride. And some people think that's life. Life is a big adventure. Where are you trying to get to? Have an adventure. How do you know you've arrived there? Just that's life. It's just a big adventure. Or some other idea. Life is having an experience where you try to get close to God. So, what's that like? An ill-defined goal can get you many different places. And chances are it will. Many different places. And those many different places always end up with this little pinch in the heart that says, there's something missing here. And what that something, just like Vyas. What to speak of ourselves, Vyas is a literary incarnation of the personality of Godhead. And that was his experience. Of course, it was by the arrangement of the Supreme Lord. But so our thing, our contribution in life may not be a great literary person, but take away the literary and put in whatever it is that is our thing. And you go and do your thing, whatever that thing is. Just do it, right? Do your thing. At the end of doing your thing, you look back on your life and you feel like Vyas felt. There's something missing. I was with a devotee visiting in their home, someone that's been unfortunately out of the association of devotees for some time. So they were very much appreciating somebody going way out of their way to give them some association. And their comment was, you know, my mother and father are very successful. And my mother just shared with me, you know, everything that I've ever wanted in my life, I've achieved it, except one thing. Spirituality, a sense of communion with God. And this person who had gone away from Krishna consciousness to a degree said, I don't want to be, you know, 55, 60, looking at my life saying, I've accomplished all the things that I want. I don't want to say that. And if you don't have a very clearly defined goal, that's what the statement, at least an honest person, is going to make that statement. Because you're not going to get there just by driving around or journeying. Life is but a row, row, row your boat. Merrily, 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 merrily. Life is but a... Or it's a stage and there's some... It's just a drama, or existentialism is becoming fashionable again. Nothing matters. Life is whatever you make it, and so on. So, shelter in God. And then there's degrees of that. And our Bhagavatam message, or the teaching, we're very fortunate. We should, I don't mind saying very strongly, we are very fortunate that we didn't have to go through, or maybe some of us went to some degree through a bunch of checking out this and checking out that, but at least sometime before we're at that stage of life saying there's something missing, and it's too late to go back and do it over again. We're getting a very clear sense of goal. And this Krishna Parayana goal is the jewel, and the ornament on the decoration, the series of decorations of the personality of Dhruva Maharaj. In this phrase, Krishna Parayana appears, now a little, just stepping back a bit, little Bhagavatam poetry appreciation for a few moments. The Bhagavatam is composed, my appreciation is, in one of the ways of its composition is there are certain phrases. And those certain phrases are like refrains. I don't know so much about classical music, but the little bit that I know, there's certain series of notes in masterful compositions. And because I was in a band, you know, a orchestra band, and the oboes would play boop, 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 and then the baritones would boop, 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 boop. And then, you know, then all of them together, and then they stop, and then they go off, and then they come back. Boop, 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 boop. So there are phrases like that, the refrains in the Bhagavatam as classic literature, that the phrase itself is very, very powerful, or it's pregnant, it's full of meaning. It's a little sutra that's packed. And as soon as you hear that phrase, Vasudeva Parayana, or Narayana Parayana, or Krishna Parayana, and it's in key places in the Bhagavatam, it just explodes with meaning. And Prabhupada would often, when speaking the Bhagavatam, would not say the whole shloka, but would say certain phrases. And those phrases were packed with meaning. And if you, it's like a gulab jamun, and you just squeeze it, and juice comes out, and more juice comes out. And it's juicy phrases that have, if you're a relisher of the juice of the Bhagavatam, the meaning starts to fill the whole passage just from that phrase. So, one of the places where this Krishna Parayana or Narayana Parayana phrase or Vasudeva Parayana come, there are several places in the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam. perhaps most well-known and repeated, Narayana Paraksarge Nakutashchana Bibhiti Svarga Apavarga Narakeshu Apitu Yarta Darshanam, which is spoken by Lord Shiva in relation to King Chitraketu, where he, Lord Shiva, is glorifying King Chitraketu. King Chitraketu demonstrated the same capacity, the same attainment as Dhruva. What is that attainment? Narayana Parayana. Prabhupada is saying this. Parayana means going forward. He's going to Krishna. He's going to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the face of any circumstance of life. Mother Parvati has just told him, imagine if you had a confrontation with Mother Parvati and she said, go to hell. I mean, just somebody on the street said something like that, your mind might be disturbed, right? Mother Parvati. And Lord Shiva's appreciation or glorification of Chitraketu is, his mind did not move. Someone said, tomorrow you're going to heaven. Or tomorrow, liberation. Or right now, in 5 seconds, liberation. And your mind doesn't move in any direction. How is that possible? It's possible if you have no other shelter but one shelter. And that's Vasudeva Krishna. So, the message of the Bhagavatam is unalloyed devotion, where there's no other shelter. Prabhupada writes in Nectar Devotion, devotional service is exclusive, where there's no other shelter but the Personality of Godhead. And in this world, everyone has other shelters. That's called, you know, in the best case scenario, mixed devotional service. And that's, you know, includes all of us. Unless we're in this position of no other shelter. And there's ways of testing that no other shelter position. And that is, you give some other option, or you give some obstacle, and the mind doesn't change when there's no other shelter. Mind doesn't change. So our minds change. We become angry, we become worried, we become fearful, we become stressed out, we become something other than fully at the shelter of the Personality of Godhead. I once was requested to give a seminar on how do you do this, and so I did some research, and Prabhupada was describing, when you say to Krishna, this is like real practical stuff, when you say to Krishna, you know, you offer a prayer. You come before Rukmini Dwarkadish. My dear Rukmini Dwarkadish, please take from my heart all impurities and leave nothing but unalloyed devotion. I simply want to serve you. Prabhupada explains. Krishna hears that prayer and Krishna considers, are you sure? And Krishna tests. What if I take this away? And Krishna observes the response. Oh, no, 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 no. Or, thank you, Krishna. Or, then Krishna says, very good. What if I give you an obstacle? Where we all know what facing obstacles is about. We have our own, and we have collective ones, and there's obstacles. Here's an obstacle. Are you sure you want only my shelter? And in various ways, this is in lectures, Prabhupada explains, Krishna will test that exclusive shelter, the sincerity, the fidelity, the earnestness of that prayer. And as Krishna sees the earnestness of that prayer, then what does Krishna do? from his side. Mai chananya yogena bhaktir avya bicharini. Krishna gives his full reciprocation. I call it the Krishna factor. Steps into one's life and it carries one to the other side of the difficult or the obstacle or the challenge or the let go of some attachment that we're not able to let go of ourselves, but Krishna will help us let go of it if we're sincere. And Krishna will let us maintain it if we're not, because Krishna doesn't interfere with our little free will. So Krishna Parayana indicates exclusive shelter. There's another verse in the sixth canto, Kechit Kevalaya Bhaktya Vasudeva Parayana Agham Dundvanti Karjaneha Niharam Iva Bhaskaram. This is a verse where it's in the first chapter of the sixth canto. Shukadev Goswami is describing to Maharaj Parikshit what is to be done. He's responding to the question, what is to be done when someone has to suffer for a sinful reaction? Because, as you recall, the end of the fifth canto is the description of the hellish planets. The sixth canto begins with Maharaj Parikshit, after having heard that from Shukadev Goswami, he's saying, my God, what a terrible thing to have to experience. Is there something that can be done to relieve people of having to experience the hellish planets due to their sinful activity? Which is a common theological question that all religions address. There's sins, and how do you deal with the reactions of sins? Any theology has some address to that question. And the Bhagavad theology presents pure devotional service in sequence. The sequence goes, first, karmakanda is presented. You neutralize the reactions of those sins through prayaschitta. That's the first response that Shukadev Goswami gives. He's examining his student by giving a right but not complete answer. And being the good student that Maharaj Parikshit is, he says in response, I have a doubt about this question, about this answer you've given, because how can something material bring one to a spiritual position? Prayaschitta is atonement. It's a material event or sacrifice or procedure for neutralizing the reactions of sinful activities. So how can you get to a spiritual position through a material activity? Or stated otherwise, in essence, he says, I've been king, and when I was king, we ruled according to the laws of Manu. When people were found to be violating the laws of Manu, there were punishments that were given according to the laws of Manu, and that neutralized the reactions of their sins. And then when they were released, guess what happened? They did it again. Because the tendency for sinful activity is not removed by prayaschitta. And Shukadev Goswami, I'm paraphrasing, of course, he says, very good. You get an A on that quiz, exam. Now, knowledge. If you have knowledge, then you won't do it again. And he gives this verse, Kechit Kevalaya Bhaktya. No, excuse me. He gives another verse. Then, with jnana, with knowledge, knowledge alone is not enough either. We all have that experience. We can know that something that's not good shouldn't be done, and we make this very careful consideration and deliberation, I shouldn't do it. Some time passes, and we do it. Or vice versa, something that we shouldn't do, and we do it. Knowledge alone is not enough. If tendency is very strong, it'll come out. It's good, but it's not good enough. So jnana and karma are insufficient. And so then this verse, Kechit Kevalaya Bhaktya Vasudeva Parayana. Agham, that's sin, and it's even the tendency for sin. Agham dunvanti karchnyena. Even the tendency is uprooted by the process of bhakti. Niharam iva bhaskaram, just like iva means like the sun dissipates fog. Direct rays of the sun, if you've seen it, it just like that, it disappears. Not slowly. There's fog, and then it's gone. Just like that. So, in the commentary, Jiva Goswami is quoted. I don't want to go into because of the time. Jiva Goswami indicates there are stages of bhakti, which Prabhupada indicates in the purport of this verse also. There's the topmost stage, but they're lesser than the topmost stages, and one can go all the way down to the beginning of the stage of bhakti, just like Rupa Goswami does in Nectar Devotion. Nectar Devotion is about uttam bhakti, right? Anyabhi lashata shunyam jnana karma janabhitam anukuyena krishna anushilanam bhaktir uttama. Bhakti means uttam bhakti. Bhakti doesn't mean mishra bhakti, jnana mishra bhakti, karma mishra bhakti. It's uttam bhakti. So even if one is in the cultivating stage where there's not enviousness towards that utmost achievement, rather there's great respect for that utmost achievement, and you know what the goal is defined. You know what it is. Jnana karma dhyanavritam. No karma and jnana. No other shelter but pure devotional service to Krishna. So you come before Rukmini Dwarkadish and you offer the prayer. Very sincerely. Please take from my heart all other things. Except I have a little requisition slip. Please leave those other things. But other than those things, please take away all other things from my heart except those other things, and please engage me in your unalloyed service. So we don't have a little corner that we keep some clutter, but it's everything. Then there'll be the series of exams. Dhruva passed the exams. That's the glorification that's being given. And when one passes such exam, even if in the beginning stage, according to Rupa Goswami, you follow the teachings of Shuddha Bhakti given by Lord Chaitanya, you'll get there. If there's no enviousness or enmity or jealousy or like another opinion. When we were in Los Angeles, in Alachua at this recent meeting, on Saturday morning, they read from Chaitanya Charitamrita. And very interestingly, the verse that we spoke about and discussed was from Adi Leela chapter 12, where the branch of Advaita Acharya was being described. And it's a section where there are different sons of Advaita Acharya. Some were very good sons and some became useless. And those that became useless, there was a schism. And so Prabhupada explains what the root of schism is. So we had a lively discussion in Alachua about that. And the root of schism is when there's an important word here. Following the order of the spiritual masters, not just accepting theoretically, but following. You accept and then you apply it. Following the order of the spiritual master without deviation. That's the active principle that allows for one opinion. There's diversity within that one opinion, but it's one opinion. And then when there's schism, one doesn't accept that principle and applies a material principle. And Prabhupada says there's no place for a material principle in spiritual advancement. There's one opinion. That's the order of the spiritual master. And just like with our, I think I can go there, with our strategic planning work for North America, when we tried to get down what is the, like, the one sentence that is like the essence sentence, remember this discussion? Should we continue to include book distribution as that essence of the mission of our preaching in North America? And, you know, there were different opinions for a little while, but then it became one opinion. Because the idea was, in addition to book distribution, we also have to take care of the people who receive books. But that's part of the mission. You don't change the mission. In the course of distributing books, see that persons live their life according to the teachings in Prabhupada's books. That's our mission of going forward with strategic planning. We can't put something else in there. The order of the spiritual master is the operative principle, and with Dhruva. Now, they'll go for the Sakama to Nishkam. Dhruva, when he approached Narada, what was the purpose of approaching Narada? I want pure devotional service. I want a kingdom. And I don't want just a kingdom. I want a kingdom better than my father's. I want a kingdom better than my father's father. I want a kingdom better than my father's father's father. I want a kingdom. Narada, you're a great sage. Can you help me get the kingdom? That kingdom just happens to be the spiritual world because his father is Uttanapada, who is the emperor of the universe, emperor of this planet. And above him is Swayambhuvamana, who's the emperor of the universe. And above him is Lord Brahma, who's the topmost person in the whole universe. What's better than that? Spiritual world. He had a material motivation to get to a spiritual place. The transition point was he accepted not only Narada saw his determination, he also saw the childishness of stamping his foot saying, I want this kingdom. He gave him the means of achieving the spiritual world because he was so determined. Dhruva felt deeply moved in gratitude for what the gift that Narada had given him. That sense of gratitude. So we've all been given that gift that can take us to the spiritual world. Even our minds may not be fixed on unalloyed devotional service. We want devotional service. We also want a bunch of other stuff. And that causes us problems. And that those problems cause other people problems. And we have problems that we end up managing in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness because we have other stuff. And our stuff bumps into other people's stuff and we have problems. So to get out of that position, one needs to come to the gratitude for the instructions that the spiritual master, that Prabhupada and Lord Chaitanya have come to give us as a one-way ticket back to Godhead. But we have to take shelter of those instructions. And that means not just conceptually say yes, but apply them so we can go step by step by step back to Godhead. Pass all the tests as Krishna asks the question, are you sure this is what you want? And we keep going. And the answer is not, well, let me think about it. I'll get back to you. It's yes. So another appreciation, and then I'll end the class. Another appreciation of the composition of the Bhagavatam, along with this sense of phrases, is just slight variations on the phrase. In the first three chapters of the first canto, just like Prabhupada said, if you learn what's in the first canto, you're equipped to go back to Godhead. Everything you need to know is there. And then the rest of the Bhagavatam is just expanding that message in very, very beautiful, mind-captivating, heart-enthralling ways. Just sublime. So, in the first canto, in chapter 3, there's this Vasudeva Para Veda, Vasudeva Para Makaha, Vasudeva Para Yoga, Vasudeva Para Kriyaha, and if that wasn't enough, Vasudeva Param Jnanam, Vasudeva Param Tapaha, Vasudeva Paro Dharmo, Vasudeva Param Gatihi. So it's pretty clear. Three times is absolute and eight times is overwhelming. It's the same root as this Krishna Parayana, Vasudeva Parayana, Narayana Parayana. That's just one thing. That's Krishna. And with that one thing, all other desirable things are accomplished. And that was what constitutes faith. And we need faith. We were discussing this just yesterday about the role of faith and going forward. The relationship with Prabhupada's purports is to instill faith, nurture that faith, that's what we need, and we don't need something else. On a number of occasions, Prabhupada explained one of the principal duties of the spiritual master is to train his disciples in such a way that they understand very clearly that material happiness is a bad bargain. To remove that false shelter, allowing for the real shelter to be taken. Because even you may know what the real shelter is. If you're still holding some expectation of happiness, you won't be able to take full exclusive shelter. And this Vasudeva Parayana means that. Full exclusive shelter. False shelters have to be addressed. And, you know, some people would say, you know, why does Swamiji speak like that? And why Swamiji speaks like that is to remove that false shelter. Transparently look at it and see what it is. And not just be angry, but see it's because we've chosen that false shelter. We can't blame somebody else. The choice was ours. And we, you know, it's a bad deal. And so now we have this baggage, this gross body and subtle body filled with, you know, not nice things, impure desires and so many attachments. But there's a very strong spiritual shelter for us to take. When, one other verse and we'll end. When Maharsh Parikshit hears about Vritrasura in the sixth canto, because Chitraketu was cursed by Parvati to become Vritrasura, he's puzzled. And he says, persons to come to the stage of Narayana Parayana, phew, it's so rare. And how did a person who is a demon come to that stage? Because Vritrasura showed he was an enemy of Indra, and Krishna appears to destroy the enemies of Indra, right? It's Ete Changsa Kalapung Sang Krishna's Tu Bhagavan Swayam. That verse says that Swayam Bhagavan Krishna comes to destroy the enemies of Indra. Vritrasura appeared as an enemy of Indra, and yet he was this Narayana Parayana personality. How did that happen? It happened because of the introduction of Narada Muni. Even a person in his previous life as King Chitraketu. So, high birth, low birth, it doesn't matter. You won't come to that stage in either case without receiving the descending mercy of such personalities as Narada. Muktanam, here's the verse. Muktanam ampi siddhanam narayana parayana. So, durlaba prashantatma kotishvapi mahamune. Maharsh Parikshit says, whew, so rare. Muktanam api siddhanam narayana parayana. How did it happen that Vritrasura became such a person? So, same. How does Dhruva, who had, I want in his case, a kingdom, and we also want something. How do we get to this other position? The Dhruva Leela gives us the path. So we have Prabhupada's teachings, just as Dhruva had Narada's association. It's equal opportunity organization here. We're not of the caliber of Dhruva. We're not the son of the king of the universe, of the planet, the son of the emperor of the universe. We don't have those material qualifications. But material qualifications aren't necessary in the Bhagavad Dharma process. Accepting the extended mercy that comes to us, that's required. And then, agham dundvanti karjaniya, niharam iva bhaskaram. That's this exclusive shelter in Krishna. That's the message we're getting. Hare Krishna. Any short questions or comments? Okay.
If Dhruva Maharaj has so many material desires, then how did, I don't know if I remember, how did Narada Muni get so attracted to him? Why would Narada Muni become so, more or less attracted to a little Dhruva Maharaj who was like a little kid and with such a vast or intense desire?
Well, how it happened was, word spread fast that the son of King Uttanapada has left the palace and he is in search of Lord Vishnu. It was the talk of the town, and got to Narada. Narada thought, let me go check out this boy. So he went. Then he tested him, just like I was describing. Prabhupada said Krishna will test, so Dhruva tested him. He put obstacles. He put alternatives. Why don't you do this instead? What about this problem? Same method. And Dhruva showed his determination. Now, his motivation was childish, but his determination was indomitable. It doesn't appear in the Bhagavatam. It appears elsewhere in another Purana where the story is narrated, that Prabhupada refers to, where Dhruva says to Narada, my dear Narada, if you can take me to Vishnu, I'll be very happy, and if not, I'll be on my way. Thank you. So he was very determined to get to the goal. His motivations weren't good, but he was very determined to reach the goal. So Narada saw, with that determination, let me help him. So certainly, Prabhupada understood our motivations, but he had a mission. And Narada's on the mission of finding persons who have other ideas. Magari, what was his motivation? But when it's the duty of someone who is preaching to see what is the quality of the individual, and depending upon the quality, when Narada went back to Uttanapada, after giving Dhruva everything to go back to Godhead, he went to visit his father. And he didn't give the same to his father, because his father didn't have that interest. What he told his father is, don't worry, your son will come back. And when he comes back, he's not just going to be your son. He's going to be this perfected soul. And you'll be so inspired by him, you'll follow him. And you'll leave home and achieve perfection too. And you'll become famous because of your famous son. So you get your son back, you become famous, and you'll achieve spiritual perfection. Stop lamenting. But he didn't give him the same thing. So what he saw was a determination, strong determination to reach the spiritual position. Because what he wanted was beyond material existence. Mixed or ill-motivated, but he saw his devotion and fanned that. That's what preachers have to do. Yes. Archita Prabhu.
This is probably going to be too long for this class, but maybe we can... Anyway, just to bring together two of the topics that you talked about, mixed devotional service, which wherein most, if not all of us, fall, and the societal responsibilities, the planning that you were talking about. Now, we have experience, you yourself personally, I know, have experience of people who are chanting Hare Krishna, going around the corner, taking a drink, smoking something illegal, coming out, distributing books, you know... sitting down in a corner somewhere chanting Hare Krishna and then, you know, distributing books and drinking, you know.
So the activity...
This is just an extreme case. And then you can, you know, water it down from there. But my point is, the mixed devotional service sometimes can have very, very bad effect on our society. And we don't have walls around the society. For instance, in this campus...
Correct.
It's an open campus. Some people live down the block. They're not really part of the immediate community, but the things that they do reflect upon us.
Sure.
So how do you handle this kind of situation of bad effects of mixed devotional service?
What do we do managerially or communications to the public or... my personal opinion is that the best position with regard to that is to be the most exemplary in character, and that will automatically from the inside go outside. That is, other persons will see exemplary character. They'll understand this is the organization, and that's, you know, those that have the capacity, you know, a little wherewithal, can make that distinction. And if another is, if we are exemplary and not just condemning, but, you know, trying to influence, by purity, trying to influence those in a mixed position, they can come closer to the unmixed position. They can be inspired. Now, there's also a third thing, a second procedure, and that is making some clearly defined standards, like a devotee in good standing is this. Now, what does membership in ISKCON, membership in the Hare Krishna organization, mean? Now, you know, we haven't done that, but if, you know, it's like I contacted... a member of the Mormon faith to find out how do they work when they have in one city multiple entities of the Mormon faith, because, you know, they're growing like anything. And they have a procedure, and they have to be a Mormon in good standing. They have very clear standards. If you want to be a Mormon in good standing, these are the standards. And if you match those standards, then you can be married in a Mormon church. And you can, you know, there's certain privileges that go. One can be a Mormon, but not a Mormon in good standing if you don't do those things. So that's one possible procedure that we've talked about. What does it mean to, you know, make a card-carrying Hare Krishna devotee? You know, and then in this country, there's legal implications if you have such a thing. Anyway, so that's the legal part and the, you know, I guess we're occupied with so many other things or reasons why we haven't done that.
The problem is that Mormons manage society. We don't. If somebody's got a shiva and is walking down the street smoking a cigarette, he looks like a Hare Krishna. What's he going to wonder if this person is being a Hare Krishna?
Okay. At least, you know, internally, and we, you know, public, by our communications to others, this is what a standards of a devotee is. Somebody sees bad behavior from a, you know, a Jewish man wearing a yarmulke, you know that he's not, you know, it's dissonant with what that faith stands for. So that comes back to the first statement, you know, just internally we exhibit maximum purity of character, not just behaviors. And any time they have contact with a Hare Krishna devotee. Certainly our Sankirtan devotees are having maximum contact, so their behavior should be ideal, based upon ideal character. And that's one of the strongest deterrents. How we conduct ourselves, those that are strong adherents, how we conduct ourselves in the public. And a lot of that has to do with how we conduct ourselves with one another. You know, the character, the qualities that we carry. I have interactions with people as I travel all the time. When, you know, they can make the distinction between this is what your organization really represents. Because there's other things that I've heard about your organization and I can understand that's not what your organization is. My brother, just very quickly, my brother is now retired, but once upon a time he was a district sales manager for something or other in the Sears Tower in Chicago. And he came to see me when I was visiting in Chicago. And he sat down with me and said, you know, I'm your older brother, let me just tell you. In the coffee room in, you know, the top floor of the Sears Tower, when the question of the Hare Krishnas come up, let me tell you how people perceive you. They don't know what's in your books. They know that you're out, you know, hustling. You want money from people and, you know, you give them something, but they don't know what's in that something. They just, you know, it's the way that you do what you do is taking people away from that message that you want to give people. You know, you need to fix that problem. I said, I hear you. You know, I expressed the same thing to some other people, but, you know, what can I do? Just do it the right way. And, you know, so we're doing things in a much better way. And people now, in the LAX case, how many complaints have there been about, and there's Zippo, because the devotees are properly trained. So that will change the impression. But once there's an impression, it's hard to change the impression. I think I have to end. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Thank you for a wonderful class. Neat. It's very nice. Thank you very much. You know, I have to run and take my wife to the doctor because she's feeling really bad. But I should be back about 9 o'clock or so, 9:15. If you'll be around.
I'll be up in the, you know where.
Okay.